If Reality Check Radio enriches your day and life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
All right, Tuesday morning, time to hear from Tim Wilms from the Unshackled.net in Melbourne for our Aussie update. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Paul. Good to be with you. The end of daylight savings in our respective nations seems to have brought in, well, in Australia at least, early winter. We've had some, well, they're called rain bombs now. The weather terminology seems to get more hyperbolic, violent. So in Sydney, there's been emergency briefings from the authorities because of a month's worth of rain dumped in Sydney in one day, urging people to stay indoors. Where have we heard that before? And there could be one of its dams, Warragamba Dam, could be breached.
Okay, so scary. It's scary.
Yes, and well, the politicians, we know that they got addicted to the daily press updates during the lockdown years. And so it's clear that they enjoy these emergency press conferences, getting their jackets in the state control center, and all the attention is on there. We're going to save you from the weather.
Yeah. They get their jollies, right? They get their jollies this way. Yeah, we have atmospheric river of rain on the way. That's a little more sophisticated than rain bomb. That's cutting straight to it, right?
It seems they want to bamboozle new scientific terms. It sounds scientific, but it's not.
Well, it sounds like you're going to war, you know?
Oh, well, we are fighting climate change, aren't we? Making electricity more expensive.
Yeah, and lowering the standard of living for everyone, making people feel grumpy and poor. Okay, well, that's a lot of rain in one day, a month's worth. Let's see if it actually happens. All right, you've had another migrant boat turn up, am I right?
Illegal arrival is the terminology.
Oh, okay, so that's how it's described.
That's how I describe it. It's not an authorized arrival, but we should call it an illegal boat. Again, in the northwest Kimberley region, which all of a sudden, under the Albanese government, Operation Sovereign Borders, it's too difficult for them to patrol this region because it's remote. My suspicion is that they don't want to patrol this area because it's under native title, and so they don't want to disturb the local remote communities.
But don't migrants turning up in boats disturb them?
They certainly do. And so this, as I said, this is the third boat in 5 months. So this boat was carrying 15 Chinese people, which is, we haven't... That's a nationality that we haven't seen on an illegal boat for a while. This occurred on Friday afternoon, but the news didn't break until late on Saturday night. And now the federal government has refused to confirm any of this information. They say we do not comment on operational matters, but certainly another boat. This is where you start, alarm bells start to ring in, I think, in the suburbs, because we've seen this before under the previous Labor Rudd Gillard government, 2007-2013, abolished offshore processing and temporary protection visas. There was 50,000 illegals who arrived during that time. 1,000 drowned at sea. There was it got to around about a boat a day.
Yeah. So,
they have kept the offshore processing center on Nauru. So these 15 Chinese people will be flown to offshore processing in Nauru, like the other two boatloads were. It was confirmed last month that 660,000 new arrivals came to Australia in the past year through the front door. So certainly the last thing we need is people, well, the ones who are coming through illegally, more often than not, they're the ones who probably couldn't clear to get here legally.
Of course not.
No. You remember the High Court decision last year where 149 criminal and national security risk detainees were released. The plaintiff was a Rohingya Muslim from Myanmar who had raped an 11-year-old boy. He came illegally in the last batch of labour boats. And we also have this next High Court decision that it's being heard this month, ASF 17. So this is an Iranian asylum seeker who's refusing to cooperate. This has been fast-tracked to the High Court. So if the High Court decided that he had to be released, even though he's refusing to cooperate with our authorities or Iranian authorities because he claims he could be persecuted because he's bisexual, you can just get a ticket to be free. You can arrive illegally in Australia and get a ticket to be free and roam around if you just refuse to cooperate. And in the last week of Parliament, before the budget, which is next month, so they're having you'd call it an autumn recess, the Albanese government, the Home Affairs Minister Claire O'Neill and the Immigration Minister Andrew Giles, they sprung an amendment to migration law, which would make it a criminal offence to refuse to be deported back to your home country if you overstayed your visa. So it imposed a mandatory jail sentence of 1 to 5 years and a possible fine in excess of $90,000 for non-citizens. Now, the nations that this is aimed at are nations which refuse to accept people who don't want to come back. So that is Russia, Iran, Iraq, and South Sudan. Now, it's been put to a Senate committee. This draft legislation, it does give the immigration minister the power to blacklist entire countries, in effect have a Trump-style travel ban because of the risk that if these people come from these countries and overstay their visa and their home countries won't refuse to facilitate their return. And it wasn't on my bingo card that the Labor Albanese government in 2024 would try and pass legislation that could allow them to impose Trump-style travel bans on entire nations, which I think this is actually not a bad thing, personally.
Well, if you wanted to stay in Australia for 5 years, you get yourself put in prison.
Yes, and the way that it's intended to work is after the 5 years, if you still refuse to go home, you can be found guilty again. Though, obviously, mm-hmm. This is going to be subject to a High Court challenge as well, because there seems to be this endless amount of pro-asylum seeker lawyers who work for free on behalf of some of the most abhorrent people in the world, it seems, sex offenders, murderers.
Trying to get ahead with some what could be higher profile cases maybe in certain circles. Okay, new Governor General. Who's the new Gigi?
Well, there was the rumour was that Anthony Albanese would appoint Australia's first Indigenous Governor General. The money was on Linda Burney, the current Indigenous Australians minister who oversaw the failed Aboriginal Voice.
So another politician just jobs for the politicians, obviously.
And also to move her on because she's in her mid-60s. She didn't perform well in Parliament during the Voice campaign, refused to debate Jacinta Price, the shadow Indigenous Australians minister who advocated successfully for a no vote. But Anthony Albanese surprised a lot of people by picking from left field, pun intended, Sam Mostyn, who is a climate change and gender equality advocate. And
all in the same package.
Also is a Republican, supported the Voice campaign, also in now deleted Twitter, X and LinkedIn posts. They've all been scrubbed, but there was a tweet where she called Australia Day Invasion Day. And it's certainly, people have pointed out, how can you be the King's representative when you're a Republican? The Australian Labor Party, its official position is for an Australian Republic, but that, in my opinion, is never going to happen because the Australian people don't see a reason to change. And now she is not the first.
That's a conflict of interest then if she has all those views and she's in this role.
Though the previous Governor General, the first female Governor General that the Labor Party appointed, the last two Governor Generals that were appointed during the coalition years, Sir Peter Cosgrove and David Hurley, both ex-military ADF, they seem to go for the sort of safe option, because obviously in the ADF you have to be impartial, but when Labor was last in government, they selected Quinton Bryce, who his conflict of interest was even more profound because she is the son-in-law of Bill Shorten, who he was a minister in the Rudd-Gillard governments and the opposition leader. And we had a hung parliament at the 2010 federal election where that's the situation where the Governor General has to make a judgment about who can form government on the floor of the parliament. But normally the Governor General doesn't need to make those sorts of quite significant decisions because most election results are clear. Well, apart from the Tasmanian state election recently, where the incumbent Liberal government has won 14 out of 35 seats, the Labor Party 10, have no idea how government is going to be formed in Tasmania, but I digress. But normally the Governor General, their role is just to officiate official proceedings, swear government ministers in, although the previous Governor General, David Hurley, swore in Scott Morrison secretly to additional ministries who he didn't even tell.
Yeah, that's dodgy.
So that was probably the most recent example of where it's seen that the Governor General, it was found that the Governor General didn't do anything wrong, but the law's being changed now so that all changes in ministry have to be disclosed. But there were questions asked about the Governor General's role, but Governor Generals, like I said, act on the advice of the Prime Minister. We, of course, had highly controversial Governor General Sir John Corr sacking Gough Whitlam in 1975.
That's right. That's what I was thinking of that, actually.
And so, because that was so controversial, and basically Sir John Corr colluded with the opposition leader Malcolm Fraser to say, if I appoint you Prime Minister, you'll pass the budget and then we'll call an election. That was seen as the Governor General way overstepping the mark. And so ever since then, Governor General's arm's length. So maybe it will be a good thing because she will not be an activist anymore. I mean,
they don't give it up.
Well, she has, as I said, deleted all of her social media posts to have a blank slate. I'm sure that when her term is up, she'll probably resume. But yes, if she's going to do the job properly, She needs to be impartial because she could be swearing in a Liberal National Coalition government in the future.
Aid workers killed in Gaza includes an Australian from, I think, an organisation that was supplying food relief.
The World Central Kitchen. So yeah. Seven were killed in this Israeli airstrike across three cars. They had the World Central Kitchen logos on both sides of their vehicles and on the roof. The IDF struck all three convoys, killing all seven aid workers, including Australian Zomi Frankom, who was with World Central Kitchen. So
I've seen Albanese do a piece, an announcement.
Yeah, he and Penny Wong have been quite strong that they want accountability. Penny Wong said at the beginning of the Israeli operation in Gaza to remove Hamas, which in my opinion is you can't remove an ideology. This is, in my opinion, the killing of these aid workers because they thought that there was an armed person in the vehicle, so they must be Hamas. They could apparently see that grainy at night but couldn't see the World Kitchen logo. So Israel has had, because of international pressure, a speedy investigation. They've dismissed two IDF personnel, reprimanded another three and allowed more aid into Gaza. Penny Wong said at the beginning that how Israel defends itself matters. The Liberal opposition, they...
But what are they defending themselves against?
Israel, you're talking about?
Yeah. They're the ones who are going hell for leather.
Well,
thing happened months and months and months ago. Already they've trashed over 30,000, if you believe the figures. Where does it stop?
Well, like I said, it's an unrealistic goal to remove Hamas.
And well, unless you kill everyone.
Exactly. And it seems that it's proven that Hamas hide their military operations and civilian infrastructure. It would appear to me that it seems that a culture has crept in. Well, if we suspect Hamas is in this area, will strike. And you might eventually obliterate Hamas, but certainly 70% of Gazans supported the October 7 horrific attack. I mean, I don't think that when Israel walks into Gaza, they're going to be thanked by the Gazans. Oh, thank you for liberating. There'll be some other group who will replace them.
They're not liberating the locals. How could they be? The locals would be lining up against or behind Hamas for fighting against occupation.
Or if Hamas has removed the next group, what is it, another group
had? Without killing everyone.
Yeah, the Liberal opposition here, they completely support, Netanyahu's, because he's facing protests.
He's got footage of them too, has he?
I'm saying Netanyahu in Israel, he's facing internal protests to get the hostages back. And because Israelis are dying as well, IDF soldiers, and they killed three of the hostages themselves. They're the IDF in mistaken identity. I know that the Zionists here in Australia and the Liberal opposition, they've said, this was a tragedy. But Israel's having an investigation.
So easily satisfied, aren't they?
This all happened because Hamas launched the October 7 massacre.
Hamas is a
terrorist organization. They're savages and barbarians. I mean, you want to compare yourselves to them? That's an incredibly low bar. I mean, Israel is a liberal democracy, which it's rightfully held to a higher standard.
No, they're killing just the wholesale killing.
Well, I'm talking about why Israel should be held accountable for this and why.
No, get that. Sorry, yeah.
And it seems that the apologists are saying, this is just it's in a war, these things happen. Even though they're saying, this is bad, it shouldn't have happened. They want leeway so that if Israel makes this mistake again, they can get away with it again.
Well, they basically got away with it already. All right, let's That's sad. Yep. Defamation trial and 140 standard drinks. What the hell is this about?
It's the Bruce Lehman versus Network 10 and Lisa Wilkinson defamation trial. So this all goes back to a Project Australia interview that presenter Lisa Wilkinson did with Brittany Higgins, an ex-Liberal staffer, who said she was raped in Parliament House by a colleague who was quickly named as Bruce Lehman. Now, there was a criminal trial which resulted in a mistrial. The ACT, the Director of Public Prosecution, Shane Drumgold, said, we're not going to have a retrial because of Brittany Higgins' mental health. And she got a $3 million payout from the Albanese government. It was used during the Morrison years. This
$3 million payout?
Yeah. To whack the Liberals as anti-women, that they tried to cover it up. It'll probably take an old other show to explain it audience.
Yeah.
But this was politically weaponized. Katie Gallagher, who is now the finance minister, admitted recently that she was given advanced knowledge by Brittany Higgins' now fiancé David Shiraz that this story was going to break. Linda Reynolds, who employed Brittany Higgins and Bruce Lehman, said that she was warned by the late Labor Senator Kimberly Kitching that this was going to be politically weaponized. So this has been highly political from the beginning. But at the end of the day, a he said, she said. Bruce Lehman, is because it has been revealed from, because Bruce Lehman, he sold his story to a rival network show, Seven News Spotlight. And we heard the recording from Lisa Wilkinson sitting down with Brittany Higgins, her producer, and David Shiraz, basically coaching her about what to say in the interview.
Oh, dear. Right.
So this is how you need to say it. And this Seven Spotlight had them side by side. And there's been heaps of holes in Brittany Higgins' story. I won't go into them. And the ACT Director of Public Prosecution, Shane Grunwald, has had to resign because it was revealed that he engaged in gross misconduct and lied to the ACT Supreme Court. It's already a political and legal fiasco. Now it's taken another turn. So this defamation trial, Federal Justice Michael Lee was supposed to deliver his verdict. It's live streamed on the Federal Court YouTube channel, so everyone's able to watch it in real time, though the footage can't be rebroadcast. So, for example, the nightly news, they can't play footage of what went on, but people can view it on the YouTube channel, which is good. Open justice, which I certainly think is a good development, that anyone can watch it to see what's going on. And I don't like, as I've said previously, suppression orders, which we have seen. It's taken a twist with a former Seven News Spotlight producer, Taylor Orbeck, who was also briefly employed by Sky News as their investigations reporter. He has put forth a 2,000-page affidavit, and he has said that...
2,000 pages?
Yes, that to lure... Bruce Lehman for an interview, because Seven News Spotlight, they got 2 1-hour episodes from this. He paid for on the Seven Network corporate credit card a $10,000 sensei Thai massage. Now, you may be wondering what type of Thai massage costs $10,000, one which is, well, goes south. And on another occasion, because he realized that he made a mistake by having a credit card paper trail or digital trail. So he alleged that Seven paid in cash for cocaine and prostitutes for Bruce Lehman. And so this has turned the spotlight on Seven News Spotlight. And the the gun has already been out for this program because of their Detransitioners episode, which was by the same reporter, Liam Bartlett, as the Bruce Learman interviews. And also the gun has been out for Network 7 owner Kerry Stokes, because he backed Ben Robert Smith, their Victoria Cross recipient who lost his defamation case against the Nine Network, who accused him of war crimes in Afghanistan. He was being backed by Kerry Stokes, paying his legal bills. So there's also been, that's another aspect, get Seven and Kerry Stokes, because we don't like what his network is putting out and who they're defending. But I think Taylor Orbach, I think he's given up on a career in journalism now, if he's dumping on his former employer, releasing. Well, there's stuff that he said where there's not evidence for. Like, these are all allegations. Seven has denied it. But he has admitted that he drank 20 standard drinks a day, because he's included his psychologist's notes. And like, I can't imagine a TV producer functioning on 20 drinks a day. Yeah, that's, I mean, you've worked in media a while. Have you known heavy drinkers like that, or have you known stories?
I've known a few heavy drinkers that I've wondered how the hell they got the job done.
But have you ever heard of checkbook journalism paid in cocaine and prostitutes and 10,000 times?
Not directly, no.
But the rest of the media, they have said these are shocking allegations, and a lot of people are suspecting, well, you would say that these are shocking allegations because, well, maybe similar things go on at your media organizations. I mean,
it's so hard to shock me these days, Tim. That's the problem, no matter what.
We do know that Sydney is basically the cocaine capital of Australia. That's why these Lebanese gangs are shooting each other up for control of Sydney's cocaine markets, and cocaine is not cheap.
Well, I think there's always been quite a bit of cocaine in the media, depending on where you look.
Yes, there is also been a report of an unnamed ex-7 News journalist who admitted doing cocaine at the Christmas party.
Oh, geez. All right, I'm coming up against time. Let's quickly flick through the next few subjects, just quickly. Girls' school in South Australia, subject to presentation, which included the B word.
Bestiality. So year 9 girls at Renmark High School, so they were given a presentation on respectful relationships that included references to bestiality. So female students said teachers told them to leave their lesson and attend a presentation in a separate classroom. So there were two staff from the Headspace Centre, which is a youth mental health charity, but all of these mental health charities, they've all embraced the alphabet rainbow gender. So they introduced a third party presenter who hasn't been outed, who I think should be named and shamed, who facilitated an hour-long presentation focused on relationships. So there was no parents notified of this. There was no teachers supervising this presentation. So this third-party presenter said that they were given an explanation of the initialism LGBTQIA+. There was a slide for what the plus means, and they just started randomly saying words that no one knew, like bestiality was explained in detail, and the presenter seemed to imply it was something practiced by people who identify as LGBTQI+. They said the queer community just accepts all of it, even though isn't it illegal? This is what one of the girls who was in the subject to this presentation, and a lot of the girls, well, fled basically by asking to go to the bathroom. And so one of them said, we're just sitting there like, what the hell? What are we doing? We are learning about animals having sex with humans. It was disgusting.
I'm not surprised that it's got to this. I thought it would get to here.
Well, the school has said that normal procedure not followed. That third-party presenter who has not been named and shamed, that was certainly a head case.
Oh dear.
Now, Cory Bernardi, who's an ex-Liberal and Conservative senator, he said in 2012 in a Senate speech against same-sex marriage that there's even creepy people who say that it's okay for humans to have consensual sexual relations between human and animals.
Well, how can you have a consensual?
And he said, will that be a future...
Dr. Doolittle, maybe.
A future step. And he tweeted this week or posted on X, you're warned these people have no limits. And there is a quite a prominent Princeton professor, Peter Singer, who's questioned why there's this taboo on zoophilia. And he even mentioned it on the ABC's Q&A program. I won't get into the graphics of what he described, but this was on national television. So, and he co-wrote the Australian Greens manifesto like 30 years ago.
Yeah, of course, the Greens, of course, yeah.
And he also supports infanticide as well, killing babies.
Oh, dear. I don't know if we could take too much.
But he got a Order of Australia.
Oh, great. Even better. All right. Digital driver license on the way in Victoria.
Yes, so you'll have to get a digital driver's license. So you can ditch your wallet now when you go out driving. You just need to download the Services Victoria app. Or
and have it on your phone. You've got to have your phone, though.
Which right? the QR code check-in. Remember the COVID one? Had your vaccine passport on it? And this is just a week after the digital ID passed the federal Senate.
Yep, we know about that. We've been talking
New South Wales, they've had a digital driver's license for a number of years introduced under their former customer service minister, Victor Dominello. And he of course, expanded the New South Wales Service New South Wales app to include all of the COVID vaccine passport and QR code check-in. So there's plenty of people who are saying, no thanks, I'll be keeping my plastic license.
Yeah, until they won't produce a plastic license, and then you'll be kind of forced in a way.
Well, they're probably waiting for people your age to eventually die so that all generations now just have the digital wallet.
Yeah, and that's your social credit. I'm thinking back to the Chinese folk who came in on the boat into the Kimberley region. I wonder if they were rejects from the social credit system.
Well, we don't know. Could be.
Yeah. Well, that would be a reason to get out. All right. And how much has WorkCover Victoria paid out for vaccine damage so far?
So they have paid out $6.8 million in workers' compensation to 130 people who suffered reactions from getting the COVID jab because it was no jab, no job.
So 130, even though that's a small number compared to how many got, but vaccines have been pulled from the marketplace for good on, you know, a fraction of that.
Yeah, this is not a conspiracy theory. This is the government has it's issued compensation because it forced these people to take this injectable vaccine, and also the antiviral. Did you hear the Paxlovid, also made by Pfizer? It turns out that it didn't really do much, but our governments have been paying Pfizer $1,000 per dispenser. But it is effective. Did you know Paxlovid, somebody your age could get it, that it does give you a rebound COVID infection. So if you're $1,000, you actually get, because Joe Biden got a rebound infection for taking Paxlovid, you get two COVID infections for the price of one.
Clown world just keeps rocking on. Tim, it's great to hear from you again. Always interesting. Thanks for reporting in, and we'll talk again in a week.
We will. Thank you, Paul.
If Reality Check Radio enriches your day and life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and the dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.